Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Influential She. We're so glad you could join us today. I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And hi, I'm Deb Soholt. And we're just really excited today to talk about the high leverage practice of self. And I think, Mel, you and I have talked quite a bit about if we could have sat down in our earlier lives and really examined ourselves, the values that we brought forward, the things that were important to us, what resonated and made our hearts sing, that maybe we could have avoided some pitfalls.
And I think the one thing that I think about a lot, and probably more in this day and age right now when everything seems so unsettled with the current pandemic, is that we sort of forget what it's like when we feel, you know, in that great zone of who we are. And I think, Deb, you put it before, when you feel like you're in the groove, we definitely know what it's like when we're not in that groove. And that's sort of what we're talking about today. When you really understand who you are, you're living out your values to your full extent and living that full life.
You know, it's totally about being authentic. And there's so many times and so many pulls and pressures that maybe you think, all right, if I become more of not really maturing and developing as your authentic self, but something that you think somebody else wants from you, and you pull yourself away from how you really feel, people can sense that. They know, and even in a non-spoken way, they can feel that the energy is misaligned between you and your authentic self. And it's not a great place to live. And it's something that we think to be influential, to accelerate your influence as a woman, you just really have to be in touch with who you are, because you can't be a version of somebody else. I'm so excited to introduce to the show Dr. Melita Rank. And she is just a great person to hang out with. I had an opportunity to get to know her through some work that we were doing at the state level. And it was a person that you're just instantly drawn to because you can feel that she is aligned with who her true self is. The other interesting thing about her is that everyone calls her Chepa. And so we're going to begin by welcoming Dr. Melita Rank, Chepa, to the show. And let's just start, Chepa, with tell us about your name and how did that come about?
First, I want to just thank you both for inviting me to this. I tell you, when you first sent the notice, talk about no matter what age you are, it just excites me and gives me butterflies and causes a whole realm of emotions. So I just want to thank you both for giving me this honor. And I always joke, as I've shared with both of you, I'm mixed race. My mother is Native and my father is non-Native. And so living on the reservation, it seems like you always come home or you always get some nickname that sticks with you for life. And so nobody hardly knows me by my real name of Melita. And I've been known by Chepa my whole life. And so being a 10-pound baby, that means that you're chubby. And so I always joke, I said, I think I'm one of the few women in this world who allows people to call her fat every day. So in our language, that actually translates to chubby. And so again, I always give permission to folks to, yep, you can call me that because that's what I'm comfortable being called. Been called that my whole life.
You know, you had shared with us that this felt like, in a way, being a mixed race person, that your name, Chepa, always rooted you back to being a Native American. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's sometimes I never felt as though I knew where I belonged. You can sense that outside and what people see of you visually, but internally of what's going on. And so for me, always having my name, and so there's a couple things, you know, Chepa is a nickname, and I was never really given my Dakota name until after I received my doctorate degree, which was just a huge, huge honor to finally receive. And so I always grew up thinking Chepa must have been my Native name because, again, I always knew about that, but maybe really didn't understand the context behind it. And so a lot of times, sometimes I think I always made sure that people knew my name was Chepa. So I always felt like for fitting in our tribal communities or, you know, some of our reservations, that I always had a sense of connectedness to it. And so that was one way for it. But As I've shared before, being a mixed race person living on the reservation and close to, in South Dakota, what we call border towns, it's challenging. I felt like I'd never, ever really fit into one or the both. And so it was really about finding my way, finding where do I fit in? Who am I? Who am I going to become? And what is it that I can be comfortable with in my own skin? So it took, embracing just my name even, and sometimes making a joke of it by saying even things like, I allow people to call me fat. It took a long time to just embrace that and own it and be comfortable with it. So a lot of times, it's not only that connectedness, but the other is knowing that my grandmother gave me that name, my mom's mom. And, you know, that's one thing to me that's always been pretty special because she's passed on now. And it's just something that I feel is an honor to still carry on. And I always share a story that my kids didn't know what my name was. They always knew me by Chapa and never really knew that Melita was my given name. So I always share a story of my oldest child who back in the telemarketer days when people would call and say they were looking for Melita, he got off the phone one time and I'd heard the conversation on his end and saying, there's nobody here by that name. So when he gets off the phone, he's like, Mom, they were asking for some Melita person. Who is that? And so that's I was not, and at that point I was like, I probably should teach them my real name in the event they ever something ever happens and make sure that they know who they can tell the people that are helping them who to call and stuff. So yeah, I've just ended up with kind of a fondness to my name and embracing it. And it was always something that connected me to that part of who I am as just a mixed race person.
Talk a little bit more about growing up on the reservation as a mixed race person and what that was like for you.
Oh my gosh, was that challenging. So I come from a large blended family. And in our large blended family, I'm the youngest of the girls. And of course, my father is non-native. So, you know, I am more lighter skinned. And it was always hard. I always thought it was a challenge because I was always made fun of or scrutinized in some way because of my color. And then I went to public school off the reservation, and there it was just the other opposite. It was, I was native enough to still not be fully embraced and accepted. And there was always that undertone, sometimes overt and sometimes not, of where I came from. But on the reservation, again, I was made fun of significantly. And, you know, just really one of those things where as a kid, you don't understand that. You got the fight or freeze mode. And sometimes, you know, for me, it was a matter of just using my voice. In that, some people will call it in that fight capacity, but it was really using my voice to speak up that I am who I am. And, you know, and sometimes I'm sure I didn't do it in the right way. I always say that on the res, people know our sins from kindergarten and continue to judge us from kindergarten on. And so that one was really hard for me, really hard to be accepted, really hard for me to understand as a young child why I wasn't fully embraced, why I wasn't fully accepted. And what was it that people felt so threatened that, you know, as a child and even as a young teenager, that I couldn't be fully embraced for just being who I am?
So, Melita, I think as you've been talking about this whole struggle you've had, it brought you back, though, to the reservation where you are today. And in fact, you are serving in an amazing role as a doctor there. Can you tell us a little bit about what brought you back and maybe about that journey to even become a doctor? Because I know that that has, like you said, you mentioned earlier, it's a huge honor, but you're back and you're giving back to the reservation. Talk a little bit about that and where you feel that pull and that desire to come back and serve.
So one of the things, you know, growing up, my mom served in a tribal leadership role. She was actually chairperson of our tribe way back when I was a little person. And so, you know, one of the things that I think continually always drives me, and I had some amazing experiences throughout my life, but what always drives me is I know things can be better. I know that it takes people invested that are from their communities and willing to really invest in seeing the whole health and the whole goodness. I can look at this lens through all of the things that don't work for us, but I also feel very privileged to be of mixed race and mixed heritage, because I feel like being able to bring both worlds together that are really about walking side by side. And so I see a lot of the beauty in our culture, and I see a lot of the things that I think are healing, that I believe that if we put the right people in the right places, really creating the environment for that whole health, that whole wellness, that we really can do that. But we have to do that and embrace that together. And there's so many of our cultural teachings and our cultural values that really promote that. But I think a lot of times we get stuck in the day-to-day happenings, like it's never going to get better. It's always going to be this. And so if we view our life through that lens, I don't believe that we will ever make it better. And I believe, again, it has to be our own finding that for ourselves. And so one of the things that I always felt was something that was a strength for me was understanding both worlds, walking in both worlds, living in both, and being able to know what works for our communities in terms of bringing some of that health, wellness. Really, how do we address our social determinants of health so we can create a better world? We can do that. And I think just what continues to draw me back is the passion for not only our culture, but I love where I live. I mean, good, bad, and different. Every community has it. I live along the river. There's so many beautiful environmental things to partake in. And not only that, that just again, being a part of the culture. And I always feel like as I've grown here and taken on different challenges throughout my life, there have been times that I've left for short periods of time and come back. I feel like people trust me and understand that. Not saying that there's not times that they're not angry about situations or upset, but feel like they can at least trust you to come to you and you can maybe help with something that's going on within their lives.
So I know that you're currently working in Indian Health Services. And before we jumped on the podcast, you were sharing about just the enormity of this entire pandemic and how you're having to deal with that on a day-to-day basis. Can you just talk a little bit about, really, I think it, for some of our listeners who've never been on the reservation and understand the dynamics of your where you live, can you share a little bit about what that's like and about what it's like within your hospitals and the work that you do on a daily basis?
Sure. So, you know, a fundamental principle to us is Midake Oyase, which is we are all related. And whether that relationship is by a blood relationship, DNA relationship, or the Hunka relationship, one that we can take, it's the principle of we are all related and we do take care of one another. And so for me, what I'd like to talk about is just the personal impacts. You know, this summer, our family ended up losing 3 people to COVID, and it was just devastating. And it feels like sometimes, though, you don't even have the opportunity to process the one death and to try to understand it, because it feels like then we've moved on to the next and we've moved on to the next. And so, you know, really trying to work together for the good of the community in terms of just understanding the mourning and the grieving process, and to see something as devastating as COVID, where one day you're fine and it could be a matter of the next minute you're not. And so one death, whether it's due to COVID or just anything else, has such a profound impact, because so many people are not only related by that blood relationship, but because of the connectedness of tribal folks, can have just some profound impacts. And so, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that comes out in unhealthy ways as well too, but there's a lot of other people who are just in mourning and grieving who aren't choosing some of that unhealthy path and might be mourning and grieving just in silence, that we really need to take a focus on how do we help that. So I think for me, not only personally, but at times this summer, one of my aunts who had passed away to COVID also served as my mother's caretaker for just a number of years, that has just had such a devastating impact to us as a family. And sometimes I feel like we can't even really sit and grieve her full death, because at the same time you're worried about, you know, is our elderly parent going to get it? Is this relative going to get it? And so we're really kind of trying to stay isolated from each other, which is another extreme hardship. And so again, I just see such a huge devastation to it. And sometimes we have to do so many pivots to it. And again, this is something that comes on so suddenly, and then all of a sudden that person's life is gone. And some of the things that we do to help us mourn and grieve and coming together with some of those cultural practices, and that you can't do. So I think it's really hard to try to process the death and the grief related to the COVID deaths, especially.
Well, Chepa, we just, appreciate you bringing words to how difficult this time is. I mean, I think so much right now we're just talking about statistics and numbers, and behind every single case are real people with real people that love them. And I think that's what, when it moves so fast, like you talked about, and it's just so pervasive, it doesn't matter race, color, creed, state, boundaries, it doesn't matter. The pandemic is affecting all of us. So thank you for bringing voice to just the suffering of it.
Yeah.
And you know, when you talk about your connection to community that is really based on your culture and how you're feeling that and grieving that, talk more about growing up and really starting to grab hold of yourself. Because you talked about being on the reservation, many times difficult, that you weren't white enough in the off-reservation public school and you weren't Native enough when you were on the reservation. So now, as a confident, assured woman, what were some of the steps along the way where you just really said, this is me and part of me and I'm claiming it?
Yeah. And I've always said that it's ironic how in our society, we still look at a person to determine where they fit in, what their role is, and making those, sometimes those subtle judgments, those quiet judgments, and other times they come just whammy. And as I shared before, I come from a large blended family, and I used to joke too that by the time they got down to, and altogether there's 14 of us. So by the time they got down to me, and I believe I'm number 10 in the 14, and it's pretty sad that I lose count of that even. But I always say, I think the DNA pigmentation gene kind of went out the window. So I am very light complected. And I was never white enough off the reservation, and I was never Native enough off on the reservation. And so I think sometimes that principle in of itself really shaped a lot of what I was going to do, because I think some of those silent judgments, or some of them that were even spoken, and some of what you even read in the research always says that for American Indian population, these are our numbers, which aren't pretty. They're not pretty for suicide. They're not pretty for finishing high school. They're not pretty for substance abuse, all of those factors. And so I used to struggle with that my whole life. And I always wondered, who am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be? Where do I fit in? Where is it that I'm going to be? And honestly, it wasn't until probably my late 30s, early 40s that this is who I am. Embrace who I am. Accept who I am. Love yourself enough to know that what you're going to do in the world, the most important person that you have to be comfortable with is yourself. And so, you know, it wasn't until then. I think I struggled a lot. I did a lot of things that at times were probably more for other people's benefit than mine, and really more so about even trying to show others that, hey, I can do this. I can make it. I'm not going to be that statistic. And so it really, I think, compelled me forward and really just pushed me to try to do the best I can and become involved in different aspects of not only building my own knowledge through formal education, but being able to be involved in experiences. I think that's been some of my greatest teaching methods. And so today I will still see my kids have to endure some of what I did. And I always feel like at least I've had some foundation to try to help them to engage in some of this, because I've seen them endure a little bit of what I have, not to that strong of a degree, because I think it's changed a little bit for their world, but I also see some elements of it that happens at times. And so, you know, the reciprocal racism, I think both being on the reservation as well as off the reservation, really had some impacts on me that really made me find where my own grounding was, where my own settling was, and that I could be comfortable with who I am and really stand up to finally seeing something instead of just being quiet about it.
You know, Chepa, you talk about really understanding and claiming yourself many times just takes a level of maturity and experiences and choices that we make and say, well, that doesn't feel good for me. That's misaligned with me. But I think that's something, you know, Mel and I have been talking about that quite a bit, about trying to help the younger generations be more introspective sooner and to claim themselves, because you can exponentially increase your authentic power and be influential in where your passions are. What would you tell younger women about maybe trying to look within sooner? Or do we think it just maybe takes enough experience to finally say enough is enough?
I think it's a combination, definitely, because when I think back to myself in the 20s and even 30s and in 20s and 30s at times, you know, as just not only that young woman, but that young mother, that young professional, that trying to find where I wanted to build my pathway, there were times that things didn't feel right. You know, somebody said something that didn't feel right. And I think it's really about being able to speak up to those instances and being able to come forward to have a comfortable, critical, necessary conversation. That's not something that I don't think I was really able to do, nor do I think that I was conditioned to be able to do it. You know, one of the things that sticks out for me in my childhood a lot of times with my mother, and it's not anything against my mother, it was the world in what she lived in. So she, you know, she grew up in an era where my mother could speak our language beautifully. None of us kids can speak it as fluently as she did. She always believed in what she ended up saying to each of us is, it's a white man's world. And she would continually say that. And I remember being this young kid going, okay, wait, dad's white. What does this mean for us, right? But what she meant by that was, the only way you're going to get ahead is to not bring this part of culture with you. And she talked about things like our, you know, again, our language. And so those are some of the elements in life that, as that young 20-some-year-old woman, that young 30-some-year-old woman, those teachings still are somewhere within your head and in the back of your mind. And I always think that knowledge is power. So if I could say something to young people, it would be, really embrace who you are. Look at who you are. What is it that you stand for in a good, healthy way? And not bring forward some of the stereotypes or some of the things that had happened intergenerationally to folks like my mother, who no longer thought the value of our own language was important because the world was changing. And really take those things, grab hold of them if they're important to you, and weave those into your life as just an everyday part of living. I wish that I'd had some of that as that young professional and that young mentor to help guide me in that. Because sometimes I think back to that 20-some-year-old life, and I think, if I had a mentor to help me along that way, I think some of my decisions in life may have been a little bit different. I love where I'm at today, but I always think that it may have been a little different because it's somebody that doesn't have so much of that emotional attachment to you that's not going to maybe give you some of that good advice that would help you as that young person, not only building your career, but I always say your career is also your motherhood. And for me, there was always, how do you balance all of this? How do you not feel guilty about being that young mom and wanting to also be that professional woman who is moving yourself through the world? So I think, again, if I had to give something, it would be to make sure that people seek that out, and it's okay to seek that out, and it's not saying anything negative about yourself as a person. It's just growing yourself.
Well, Chepa, I think that's something we all struggle with, is the whole balance of professional life, being a mother, a friend, and trying to figure out how we put it all together and make sure that we're giving everybody, including ourselves, the amount of attention that is needed, you know, in that way. And you know, I think if you could talk a little bit about too, I know you have three children yourself and the struggles of trying to balance that out, and how do you know, you know, where you are your role is as a mom and as a doctor and as Chepa. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh gosh, do those worlds ever intersect and find the perfect storm to collide? So my doctorate degree is in social work. And so, you know, I spent all my career in the helping profession and I absolutely love it. And there isn't anything that I would have ever changed about that. And I always say that, you know, the two older kids, life went well for the most part. I mean, we had the normal teenage things, the growing pains. And when that perfect storm enveloped, my youngest child had lots of challenges just emotionally and, you know, the intersection and the colliding of those. And so I really judged myself harshly, like, what am I doing wrong? And I tried to parent all my kids the same. And she's the one that definitely slapped me in the face several times. And you know, not physically slapped me by any means, but just every experience. She had challenges making friends. She had challenges just in all facets of life. And was there ever the storm that I recall a one time ending up in, we'd had just a multitude of things going on. And you know, the friendships weren't happening, or the friendships would happen, and then it was some of the behavioral things that would be happening, going on, that just took a toll on her emotionally. And I tell you, talk about vulnerability at your footstep and right in front of your face, and here you are trying to help your kids, you're trying to get them through life and get them to transition successfully to adulthood as best as you can. And here's my youngest daughter, and I did not know how to help her. I did not know how to help her in so many facets of life, and I felt like no matter what I was doing or what I was giving, it was just never enough. And I look back on my tenure as a parent with her in a lot of her formative years and that junior high age, that early high school, even late high school. I mean, she's barely out of high school. And there were moments that as a mother, I did not know if my child was going to be alive. There was a time that it would be at work at a service industry and she'd come back and she didn't really know I didn't do a good job of teaching her how to take a stand for herself. Or even if I felt I did a good job with it, the role that I used when I taught her that was the same that I did with my other kids. And that's not how she processed things. And so when she would come home from work and so-and-so had a lighter and singed her hair and you know, and I just think of all these things that took the emotional toll on her that from the mom view, I didn't see very well. And, you know, her senior year of high school, as I was sharing with you all before, that I ended up in the principal's office. And here I am, you know, always being at the school in some helping role or doing something to help someone else in crisis. And then here I was in my own crisis and trying to get the school to just believe and take a stand as well with what was happening with my daughter. I wasn't trying to say that everything was innocent, but it wasn't until, you know, the tears just burst and here I am, a bawling sack of just everything, to say, I don't know if my daughter's going to be alive tomorrow. You have to help. You have to do something. And, you know, and I'm coming to them just pure raw and pure vulnerable. Everything about everything just goes out the door when it's your child. And so you're sitting here trying to balance all of these things, and being that professional honestly just goes out the door when you're sitting here trying to save a life. And it was my own daughter's life that I was trying to save, because there would be nights that I would be wide awake and, is she okay? And there would be times that I couldn't find her. And I recall one time finding her by the river and going, dear Lord, is my daughter going to be in that river? Is my daughter going to be alive? And so really, it was about being vulnerable enough to let go of that societal image that you thought you had to have and just reach out to people and go, I need help. We need help. I need everybody's help on trying to make sure that my daughter remains healthy, as healthy emotionally as she can be for what's within her mind. So, you know, a lot of times those things between parent, professional, you know, just all of that can just intersect and throw you to your knees and just a heartbeat. And she was definitely my kid that is the one that takes a lot for me as a parent to have to change how I do things. And I have to, you know, I've had to give my husband, who's not my current husband, who's not their father, permission to just, again, tell me when I'm being out of line, because the way I parented the other two doesn't work for her. And so really about how do I shift that, and how do I get through that a lot for myself. And to this day, that those moments still bring me tears, and I have to wipe them away and really figure out how to continue to get through those times. And to this day, we're still dealing with that, because mental health is just such a lifelong impacting event in our everyday life. And so, again, I think it's really forces me as her mom to have to look at how do I learn a different way to deal with her, because we can't parent each of them the same way, as even though, you know, ideally that works easiest, but that just didn't work for her. So yeah, those moments are very raw and authentic and very vulnerable for me.
Wow, Chepa, I mean, it's just honored that you would share this incredible vulnerability, because it's the truth of the matter that this whole image that we have out in front of people, which is important. I mean, being professional and being in the workspace, but we have this multifaceted life, and life is messy and it doesn't always go perfectly. And yet we want to portray to the world that, oh yes, we're always confident and in charge. And for you to open up your vulnerability to get what you need, I mean, that's what we're talking about, is that this authenticity of, no, things are not great. I need your help. I need to be real and honest with you. That's a really important thing about claiming your full self, instead of always having that walled off, especially when you're in personal times of despair. And then for you to talk about really trying to understand your daughter's authentic self, that you had two that, you know, you sort of really understood them, but then you had one that it was like, okay, I need to know her differently than I've known the others. That's an incredible story that you shared. And I think will really move people, because it isn't always so tidy. And we need to talk about this more as women, because as mothers, and we have the job to bring babies into the world. And that is a connection that you don't just step over the threshold of a workplace or a community volunteerism or somewhere else and say, all right, now that part of me doesn't exist. If we're going to show up as authentic people, then we have to align ourselves and bring all the good, bad, and the ugly into it. Even though we're not talking about here, like spilling ourselves and troubles at every moment, but at the times when we need to, of being total and complete authentic people, because this is a part of who we are and what's going on in our lives right now. Amazing story. How's your daughter doing now?
You know, so absolutely, because I think the other voices in our head always go, oh my God, they're going to judge us. Oh my gosh, this. Oh my gosh, that.
Yep.
And I had to let that go, because it was like her life is more important than somebody going, oh, did you know what happened to her and her family? And it's like, you just have to learn to let that go. You know, and today she's still, we still have struggle. But it's being able to know when we have to walk away from each other, because we're both at moments where this isn't going to get better. We just got to walk away. And for me as a person, it's like, eat your tongue right now and just shut up. You don't need the last word. She doesn't need the last word. You'll both get through it. And so, you know, again, every day is a new day and a new opportunity for us. And sometimes we leave the previous day as, yeah, that really didn't go well. But to give ourselves permission to go, that day really sucked. And honestly, as a parent, coming back to your kid and going, I'm sorry, I really failed and I really sucked yesterday and I shouldn't have said that. That's, for me as a person, that's really hard. So I have to practice that. And I have to be, like I said, I gave my husband, I'm like, cause he knows sometimes, again, our defenses can go up and it's like, you got to tell me when from your point of view, I was really being a jerk cause I may have not seen it. And, sometimes he's that buffer between the relationship where we may not be seeing things the way we are. We get so caught up in our own perception, we fail to see the full story. So
I think it's that vulnerability though, whether it's with our own children or spouse, but also with people around us, that a lot of times as professional women, and maybe in whatever aspect we're in, we want the perception that, you know, things are perfect, it's all good. And it's really when we let people in to see that we are human, vulnerable, we have our weaknesses as well. Not only does the rest of the world, are they drawn to us as people and individuals, but it's when I think we can start to heal ourselves in our own way, because that's so I think common among women today, and that we feel like we've got to be able to do it all. And your story of being able to be vulnerable and letting that raw emotion in front of the principal come out, and being able to tell your story today, is exactly what we're talking about when we want to own who we are as an individual, as a person, and really understanding and leveraging ourselves as people. So I personally want to thank you for sharing that with us, because we all need to be able to let go of that persona of who we think others think we should be.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that is so true. I think we just put so much on ourselves because of the societal pressures, those images. And once we can own who we are as ourselves and know that we still have that accountability and responsibility to self, to others, and to who we have in our world, then that's when I think that we're truly on that path of our own true internal happiness. And it's not about making sure that I live up to this image that has been put forward.
Well, Chepa, thank you so much for being on our podcast and for talking about the vulnerability of really understanding yourself, and that it is, you know, living a life is just about fun and mess and new understanding. But the sooner we can accept who we are at our core because of our own spiritually given gifts and what makes our heart sing, the more we can, even through the messes, make those decisions in our own truth instead of something that you think is put upon you by someone else. And so this isn't easy stuff, but it is really great stuff that it's worth pursuing. And your stories really help us to see that and just appreciate all the good work that you're doing on the reservation in South Dakota, and for moving on and getting your advanced degrees and then coming back to match your passions and your authentic self with now your knowledge and expertise to help others. It's just so great. And I know our listeners are going to be wanting to come to South Dakota and meet you. So thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you both for allowing me time to just share the vulnerability of that story. Those are not, still even to this day, not easy things, because those are things that, again, I think that we've always felt that we hold in private, and we can no longer suffer in silence. If we do, we're not going to create those authentic selves, and we're going to continue to just have so much emotional heartache. So thank you for that, for allowing me this time and this opportunity.
Thank you so much. And thanks to all of our listeners that tuned into our podcast today. You know, we like to leave you with a question at the end. And have you sat down and really thought about your authentic self? What are those core things within you that are just truly you? And are you allowing them to come out and play every day in the good and the bad, and living aligned with your true self? We encourage you to do that. We want to thank everybody for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. We hope you'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.